is no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, just nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Is
Can
that
you feel it?
You talking about Berlin?
Yeah.
That's one way to put it.
Honestly, looking out here, we're right on the line of the wall, too.
This is fucking awesome.
We're in Berlin right now. For those of you who don't know, we are in Berlin, Germany.
We are literally in Berlin. It's my motherland.
Fatherland.
Whatever it is, it's a land.
No, and it is very surreal to be here. Our travels have brought us here, and welcome to the all Q&A Relax Fit episode.
That's it. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the Relax Fit Last podcast on the left. I want to thank everyone who submitted questions. We had many of them, and they were all wonderful. And we did have, I am Ben, number one. That's Marcus. And Henry, of course.
Yeah.
And also thanks to everyone who came out to our live shows. This is our final day of the tour. We're recording this on Wednesday, so we have one more show tonight, and we cannot wait to perform for the Germans.
I mean, we had a lot of hecklers in Stockholm, which was fun.
Did we
had fun. Yeah,
you had
hecklers.
One heckler who was heckling you about aliens, which was the nerdiest heckle we've ever had.
It's a gravity well.
I know. I was like, I know. Because it's hard because the show, the live show, as those of you who have seen it know, it's a little broader than our recorded episodes. And so it's hard to get to the true nuts and bolts.
It was truly amazing. Henry has never been heckled because Henry does an alien segment. I do a wrestling segment. Marcus does a conspiracy. And during Henry's wrestling segment, or during Henry's alien segment, a dude really wanted to make a point about gravitational pull of UFOs.
It was a correction that he decided that he wanted to give me in the middle of my spiel, and it's very difficult to address it.
And Henry just looked at him and be like, this is not a TED talk. Like, this is still a comedy show. Thankfully, he stopped interrupting at that point. But anyway, let's get to some of these emails. Thank you all once again for submitting.
It's fun to think. It's fun to analyze ourselves, isn't it?
A little bit. There were some questions where I was like, that's triggering.
Well, there was a lot of
a little bit weird.
There was a lot of like, can Ben Kissel read? Which was really fun.
That was nice. And I'm like, technically, yes, I can read very, very well. In order to speak this much, you have to be able to read. It's a bit.
They don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it because
technically it's a testament to my amazing acting skills.
Wow. You actually have become more of a shapeshifter.
Yes, indeed. I did a Boris Johnson impression during the live shows, and I must say, Henry,
taking the state down.
Look out, buddy. There's a new actor in town, and he's big and he's beefy.
I want to put it in my will where you have to do that Boris Johnson at my funeral. It is my new favorite thing. I think about it and I laugh. When I need a little bit of a giggle.
My baby Marcus, I'll be dead long, long before you.
Man, who knows, though?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Now, with these first questions, we had many, many questions. So we wanted to boil down, like, we got the more specific questions. But we want to address a couple ones that a lot of people ask that we're going to kind of hit up top.
Yes.
And one that the first one up, which I think we have addressed many times in other mediums, but so many people have asked it via email that I think that we should just do it real quick.
Let's do it.
Which is, how did the boys meet?
That's it. So it's actually kind of an interesting story. We all obviously met in New York City, coming from different walks of life. I was introduced to Marcus by a comedian named Mike Lawrence. Mm-hmm. You all might know Mike Lawrence. He's a great roaster, and he's also a great writer. He's a good man.
And at the time, Mike was living in my cellar.
So he introduced me to Marcus because Marcus was doing a program called Portrait of a Comedian.
Mm.
And indeed, Marcus was like, Ben, you're just fat enough to be on the show. And I was like, thank you, Marcus.
Well, it was a show where I would go out and I would record local, like, New York City comedians live, and then interview them afterwards. And I got to interview like so many like cool dudes that are now like pretty famous. Like back then, it was like, you know, like Rory Scovel, Kumail Nanjiani,
Donald Glover, like those people. Did you ever meet him? By then,
I came into the scene right after he broke.
He
like,
became right famous after. Immediately.
Yes. Yeah, he well, became Donald, famous. Donald but like Michael Che, like yep. 9 months in, interviewed that guy. Like there was a lot of cool dudes that are now like pretty big in the comedy world that I got to interview back then, and Ben was one of those guys.
It's completely insane the class that we came up with in hindsight, now that we can reflect a little bit on the 15 years. Mm-hmm.
Mark Norman as well.
Mark Norman. When it comes to Donald Glover, he was actually in a sketch group called Derek?
Derek. Mm-hmm.
And it was he and three other people.
Two other guys.
And they were wonderful. And we got to meet him a few times. And I have to just say, he was incredibly nice.
Always.
And now he is Childish Gambino. His rap is like, he's like unreal talented.
No, he's very talented.
He's like unreal talented.
We didn't understand the breadth of his talent at the time. And now you're like, I see you were holding back.
The fact that he was remotely kind to us is like, well, thank you so much. And so I spoke with Marcus.
But Kissel and I had already been hanging out. Like, we were already drinking.
Yes, we were drinking buddies. I will say Marcus and I bonded over our mutual love of Sasha Grey,
mm-hmm.
and our mutual love of really disgusting horror films, specifically Cannibal Holocaust. Yep. So we bonded over Sasha Grey and Cannibal Holocaust. And then Henry and I, we met because you were in an incredible sketch group called Murderfest.
Yes, and you lived with Holden McNeely, who was also like, we were all were writing Murderfest, and we also took over your entire apartment by turning into a rehearsal space, and you loved it. You really did.
I did until about the last year.
Yeah.
Because it was about 9 years of every night it was rehearsal for Murderfest, which you guys did rehearse, but then there was also just a lot of drinking.
A lot of drinking, a lot of chain drugs. Smoking inside, yeah. A lot of drugs. But we did that inside the apartment. But I think that that's a one thing that people talk about on the show, being like, it really did start pretty naturally.
It did.
We were all just comedians. And then I was quickly introduced to Marcus within that time period because of Portrait of a Comedian, mm-hmm. and also just hanging out and getting fucked up. And then it did do the thing of, I remember it was one specific night we were watching horror movies at Marcus's house,
mm-hmm.
and we were just ripping bongs. It was Butterball. One of those. Yeah, it was Butterball.
Butterball, the best bong in the world.
Butterball actually ended up getting broke at a party that Marcus had. And this is the perfect Texan revenge. He said, you can get out of here. You can leave. I'm keeping your shoes. You kept the man's shoes and made him walk home barefoot because he broke your bong.
Butterball was the perfect bong. It was a gift from a close friend that it had been broken in for years. It was gave the perfect hit every time. I loved Butterball so much back when I smoked weed. I don't anymore. But yeah, Butterball was the perfect hit. And I'm so sorry, man. I was like, yeah. Give me your shoes.
Fucking shoes. That was back when you were true authoritarian. You were you were a strong party leader at the time.
True.
But we were very... So I want people like to maybe understand, we haven't explained. It's like we were already doing comedy. We were doing stuff to the point where Marcus was interviewing us, acting as if we knew what the fuck we were talking about.
Yeah, and I was in radio. Like, I was not in... Like, for me, comedy was just like a path into radio. Because I never... once like thought comedy was going to be any sort of career path for me. Like,
yes.
Comedy
it was a dead end. It was a fucking suicide track.
Comedy was just a total accident because I had applied to a job at The Onion, like an internship at The Onion on a lark, and it just so happened that they were looking for a guy for Onion Radio News.
Yep.
And then through that is where I kind of got put on the track to comedy that eventually led me to fucking Berlin.
And for me, I knew, so I would go and visit the apartment that Holden lived with, with Carly and with our friend Keb, and I just knew I had to get into that apartment. So a room opened up, and I waited 6 months, and I was able to move in, and that was the biggest moment of my life, because as soon as I saw Murderfest, I was like, I need to be friends with these guys.
Yeah.
But then we were truly friends. It wasn't like a made-in-show business, like, because we don't schmooze. We're not good schmoozers because we're loud.
It's fucked with our careers.
Yeah, because we just don't know how to, like, tell someone that they're not a fucking jackass if they're being a jackass. But that was maybe the biggest moment of my life, was getting to meet Murderfest and honestly just learn your process and follow you in your careers, because at that point Murderfest was the creme de creme, the top sketch group in maybe the country.
It was right as right when you didn't have to go to comedy school in order to be in a sketch comedy group.
Right.
When you just used to be a group of guys or a bunch of people would get together,
yep.
and they would look at their influences and try to copy them, which is what we did for years, trying to copy mm-hmm. Mr. Show, until I got my heart broken by sending sketches to Bob Odenkirk and he said that I was garbage.
Not to defame anyone, but all of us have had a moment with some of our idols, and we realize realize that don't always meet your idols.
No, that's all I'll say.
But I mean, I was the same way with Murder Fist as well. Like when I saw Murder Fist for the first time, like it was dark, weird, funny, original. Like it was everything I always wanted, like in a comedy group. And I was the same way. It's like for me, it was like I have to work with these guys. Like I have to do something with these fucking dudes.
It was honestly the antithesis to Saturday Night Live, which was just this, you know, PG bunch of garbage at that point, and it was just so badass. So,
but
you know,
now,
this is just a good
this
reminder.
Kind of, like it created this place, right, where everybody kind of got together and we all became genuine friends. Yep. And like, because Roundtable came of that original, like that first grouping, with you guys meeting Murder Fist Energy and that turning into what would become CCR, which would become LPN.
That's right. And Roundtable was Kevin Barnett and I, RIP Bird Luger, we love you forever. Kevin and I wanted to do a podcast together. Mm-hmm. So we approached Marcus and we're like, let's do a show.
And I had all the I had all the toys.
You did everything. As always, we're like, I think he'll do everything if we don't let him know that he's doing everything. And then slowly but surely, we added Eddie, and then Jackie was like, I want to be on the show. And then Jackie was on the show.
No, she didn't say, I want to be on the show. She came in on a guest, and then she cornered me in my home and said, I'm on the show now.
Which is also the story of me getting on Last Podcast on the Left.
Yeah, the Zabrowskis find a way.
The Zabrowski strong arm.
Well, you just understand. You have to do the Lyndon B. Johnson move of, like, your fly has to be open, and you have to press somebody against the wall. Where you guys had started Last Podcast on the Left just straight up as horror movie.
Just a horror movie podcast.
Yeah. Because, which is where the name came from. It's people to ask about that being like, it does really just came from you guys technically came up with the name. I had nothing to do with the name.
Ben came up with the name. Yeah, because we were, because at that point we were just trying to do whatever we could as as like doing podcasts. It's just like, what are we interested in? Let's do a show about it. Because we did, because Top Hat's older than
Top Hat was the second show. Roundtable was the first. Top Hat was the second. Marcus was doing Sex and Other Human Activities. I had a sports podcast for a second. We were just throwing anything that we could against the wall. And the way that Last Podcast ended up taking off was because, obviously, once Henry came aboard, Henry and Marcus had a mind meld that was brilliant, and they were like, we're going to get this shit into some dark territory. And the first time I realized how dark it was going to get is episode 50 with Toy Box Killer, and I was like, I don't know, guys. It's getting pretty dark. I don't know if this is funny.
But it was
you guys that really took it to that next place, which, honestly, nowadays, it seems almost cute, because now, of course, as we were talking about yesterday, there is a home flipping show called Murder House now.
Yep.
And so I think it's Murder House Flip. Yeah, that's coming out soon. It's like, oh, Jesus.
We have slid into the mainstream. It does not make any sense. But we actually started because we realized at some point that there is a whole wealth of material in the world because that's when I was really truly getting obsessed with Coast to Coast AM. Mm-hmm, and we were, Marcus and I realized, like, we will then just truly flip the conversations we were having about the subjects we were interested in into the show. And then it was probably around episode, I want to just straight up say, I think it was about episode 100,
right?
Where we were like, all right, now we're going to make this research fucking up to our eyelids show.
Yes. I can tell you which one the research flipped on me was. It was around the 70s. I think it was like 74, 75, the Satanic Panic episode.
Yes, when you first time we all sat and read a book for the show.
Yeah, that I sat down because we were Henry wanted to do an episode on the Satanic Panic, and I had just picked up a book called Satan Silence, which I was reading, and it was like absolutely fantastic, and I wanted to talk about like all this shit on the show because there was so many. The Satanic Panic is full of so many weird, funny details. It's so much weird shit. But in order to really talk about those funny details, to give you guys subjects to joke off, like, you have to tell the story. You have to give context to all of this. So that was kind of the first episode that, you know, at least I realized, like, that we needed to, like, I have to give these guys a story. I have to give y'all a story.
How
in
long
order
have
for
we
y'all
had
to do
the
it.
Outline?
The outline? The outline, I guess, I mean, it's evolved. The outline that I use for every episode has evolved over the years.
But when did we start using one?
Start using one, I think, around maybe Ed Gein, or maybe long before that. I really don't know exactly when it flipped, but I know we were using as far back as Ed Gein. Like when we were doing stuff like, you know, Bundy and Gacy, like it was, there was like kind of a loose outline, but not anywhere near like it was now, because back then it was, that's part of why we're going to be, covering all those guys in our book, while we're revisiting them in our book, because back when we did them, we weren't doing the type of like super actual deep dives that we're doing now. And that was one of the questions, actually, to answer it very quickly. The book's coming out in April. It's done. Like we've given the full everything to the publisher. It's done, and it's coming out in April.
Yes, and this book is going to be amazing. And when Marcus says outline, and this is for the people who want to get into podcasts, it's not an outline. It is a full script. Mormonism Part 4, for example, was 24 pages.
This is what we're writing in a week. So this is what you have to watch.
Because we do get that a lot. Be like, what's your advice for, you know, how do you break through? And it's honestly just that much amount of work is required. And the way that we've been able to sort of like, first of all, grow as entertainers and as people, but we stay above a lot of the fray. Because we don't just focus on ourselves. No one cares. I always hate that when it's like someone who's like, this podcast is all about me and how I feel. It's like, no one really cares.
But that's kind of what I'm almost scared about this episode, is that I don't, it's very strange
this
to
is
be
like naked.
Revealing.
We could do it once every 376 episodes. How's about that?
But you know, if you want to do a podcast, have content. And then from that, so then people can learn, and it's not just about you. And then people can learn about you through the content.
But also, Marcus and I, when we go into producing the episodes, a part of it is understanding that the entire either series or the entire series needs a act one, act two, act three. But each episode also needs an act one, act two, act three. It needs to move into place, which is we're still working on.
Yeah, right. And it also, like, it needs a perspective, because, like, in the, like, every single time when we're working on an episode, and especially, like, when I'm about to start writing a script, because I write at the very least 15 pages every single week, like, for the last, like, I guess 200 weeks or so, like, I've written a 15-page script, like, every single week, and what at least me and Henry found is, when we didn't talk to each other before I started writing, when we didn't like really talk through like what the perspective, what angle we wanted to come from, what our different thoughts were on the subject, we would have to re-record episodes, because when me and Henry went into it,
you've done that a couple times, and it sucks so bad,
and you go in and you like you record it, and it's like an hour and a half long. It's an hour and a half,
and you know it's sucking.
You know
you have
you're
to
doing
do it, but you're still doing.
Yeah, you're locked. You're locked into it the whole time, and then there was always like, we haven't had to do it in a very long time, but there was always this routine that we would have to go through. We'd all have to go through the motions where like we end the episode, we're in the middle of it. We know we're gonna have to re-record it. We end it. We know we're gonna have to re-record it. But I always have to say like, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to start listening to it, and then I'll let you guys know.
Yep.
And then it's like I get 20 minutes in and I send the text, well, we got to do it again.
Yeah, Ben, like, you made too many Ruth Bader Ginsburg references. We're going to have to cut this episode. So just to sort of put a button on the question of like, how did we meet? That's basically it. It was through friendship. It was very organic. And, you know, this is just a good reminder. If you do want to be in the arts, don't burn bridges. Be open to people. Find people that inspire you, that motivate you. Don't hang out with, because there's a lot of bitter comedians in like year one.
Yeah,
like you'll
be, oh, no, I remember be
like,
that.
I've been doing comedy for 8 months. Oh, I hate the grind. It's like, we're not even in it yet.
Yeah,
like we've never performed in front of a crowd. So, you know, if you do want to be in the arts, just surround yourself with people that inspire you, that motivate you, encourage you, and people that truly make you feel good.
And unfortunately, smoking cigarettes is a really good way to make new friends.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like I've quit smoking cigarettes like maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, but I do not regret starting.
That's how I met Andy Richter cigarettes. Was because I smoked cigarettes. There are things that you like learn.
Yeah, well, so many things. Ask,
all right, so here's another general question.
Okay.
Here's another general question that it was asked many times. How do we not kill each other on the road and in life in general? Because we do genuinely have a very stable friendship. And I think a part of what we do is that we have gotten good at having uncomfortable conversations and flatly expressing the problem that we might be having and letting it go. Like,
And honestly, all of the problems that we have, I would say one of the bigger issues is I tend to be late. Which on the road can be a pain in the ass. But even that's like not the biggest issue. None of us are doing heroin in the bathroom.
No. Our biggest are truly the biggest fight we've had, and it was a genuine fight, and afterwards you're just like, what? Was about food on the road in various places where we travel. About how Marcus
only wants pizza.
He only wants pizza.
No, I don't only want pizza. That's what you guys don't fucking get. I don't only want pizza.
No, you're gonna say you want a hot meal. I know exactly what you're going to say.
I want a hot meal.
I know. But the thing is, a hot meal translates to pizza.
Yeah, well, that's because pizza is the easiest hot meal there is.
Just saying a hot meal, to me, just sounds like a homeless man could take shit in a bucket and put a sandwich on it.
That's a hot meal.
But Kissel and I, sandwich people.
Sandwich people. Because you get sustenance, you get bread, you get some veggies, some vegetables, meat, some cheese.
You never know what you're going to get with a sandwich.
You never know what you're going to get with pizza. Honestly, we are now fighting.
But also, I actually, because a lot of people, I got several questions being like, why are Marcus and Henry always visiting museums and Kissel's always drinking alone? And it's not, that's not true. Honestly, Kissel and I drink a lot together.
Oh, yeah.
They never said he, but you know what it really is that we've realized as three adult men, we can't control each other's schedule. And the idea of me being like, okay, boys, we're meeting at the museum at 1:35.
Let's ruin this vacation.
Yeah, like, because also Natalie has expressed to me, because I am one of those, weirdly, despite what you'd think about me, I'm a hyper planner. I'm one of those, when we go on vacation, I was like, then I'm going to hit here, and then I want to go over here and get coffee at this very specific patisserie, because I read about it in my Time Out magazine. And then I'm going to go over here. But Natalie showed me I have to go more with the flow.
You're going
to
love Berlin. They're very regimented people as well.
No, I saw a lot of...
For better or for worse.
Also, Berlin, going to say, a lot of small mustaches.
I love Berlin.
Which I think is a... I think it's an iffy choice.
It's an homage.
Well, another thing that we've also done on the road that we did from the very beginning, even before we started, like even when we were only doing like 50, 60 people, like when we were going to Washington, D.C. and doing the Washington, D.C. podcast festival.
Oh, my God.
Which I'll always love, but it was in an office room with fluorescent lighting.
And to be fair, we did headline.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, we did headline. Remember, it was just a piece of computer paper that was hanging off the wall that just said Washington, D.C. podcast festival taped up. Yeah,
and our longtime fan, like Claude, came out. High school, he had his parents drive from like 6 hours away.
Unreal.
But what we did from the very beginning, always separate hotel rooms.
Separate. It doesn't matter if you're at a Motel 6, just spend the $79 because really, you know, all of us, we get along very well because we're all actually very intense people, but we're intense in different ways.
Yeah.
And so it really is like a perfect marriage. And
I just can't sit in your shit smell.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to. Also, that was a question. Who fart smelled the worst? And I'm going to say I was the number one candidate. But then Henry has taken the mantle, but now Marcus is definitely the...
Mine are pretty bad now, because I had to start taking...
I don't know what happened to him.
I had to start taking suppositories for my bleeding asshole that came from stress.
Right.
And the suppositories, one of the side effects is extreme flatulence.
Because back in the day, like I'm talking like just relatively recently, I went to the bathroom in the green room, and you all said I had to go to the doctor.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, because it was like, it was bad enough.
It smelled like the lava of Mordor. I didn't know what was happening in there.
It smelled like the inside of your stomach lining is sliding out of your asshole.
It was. So basically, for that.
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
And I also, like, on the road, like, I'm also the type of person, like, I need alone time.
Absolutely.
Like, I've always been
that
way.
We all like that, though.
Yeah, we all need.
Kissel goes on his adventures. I go on my little adventures because I'm the food boy that needs to go to the food experiences. And sometimes people will join me. Sometimes I do not force anyone to join me.
No, thank God you don't force us to do that.
No, but you wouldn't do it.
I do. I go to record stores when we go to different cities. The two of you have come with me on record shopping trips. Exactly once.
Oh, yeah, no, well, I don't understand why you don't just buy them online.
It just sort of feel like, because I do feel bad, because it's not like, you know, like Natalie and I were in Stockholm at the ladies' clothing store, Big Bock, and I'm just kind of looking at my phone, standing while she's doing shopping, and I felt like that, watching Marcus, and I'm just hassling Marcus, because he's watching me just going... Huh. Oh, so that's a good one?
Like, that's a nice one, huh?
Meanwhile, I'm picking out clothes for Natalie, which has been like, this one's nice. And she's like, yeah, it's because there's holes for the tits.
Yeah, exactly. It's called crotchless panties, Henry. I can't wear these to exercise.
Well, it's because I'm going there not knowing what I'm looking for. And I'm looking for surprises.
No, that's why I don't want to harass you.
So to just put a little button on that, when it comes to friendships, just know each other, give each other space. And again, just hang out with people that you truly enjoy. This was for you guys, and kind of touching on what we spoke about a little bit earlier regarding how we all met and sort of one of our bonding things. We did get a few questions about chaos magic, and people are wondering, are you guys still experimenting with chaos magic, or was that more of a I don't want to say phase, but was that an experiment that you did, and is it gone, or what do you guys think about that?
Let's get into it slightly. So I will admit, because I do believe, because the idea is that you lose all potency with magic rituals if you do not talk about the things you got from them. I do not believe that our success or what's happened to our sex, it does not have not anything to do with some of the works that were done when we were, Marcus and I were both like fervently into chaos magic. Mm-hmm. So we were really concentrating in for a period of time. It was about 2015.
So what were you guys doing in that time?
Well, I put together for Heroes Reborn. I tested for Heroes Reborn. I fasted for 2 days. I set up a vision board of mm-hmm. what I wanted. I create a sigil. I jerked off onto the sigil.
Right.
And I fired it, and I sat and stared at my phone with a Heroes Reborn like thing that I made in front of me, just waiting for the phone call.
Did you think about maybe making it bigger so it wouldn't have gotten canceled immediately?
That, sir, is chaos magic.
but it led to a lot of chaos in my life. Yep. That was afterwards. It really was true. Like seeing phantom things, weird, like literally weird wind going through the apartment, especially because I was in Toronto at the time, isolated,
right.
And things were really, really crazy. But then I met Natalie and all that kind of stuff, kind of like things got solidified in my life.
I mean, for me, I was doing chaos magic for mental health. Like I was trying to use it, like, because I was trying to find any way to break out of my own brain and to try to just to be able to live my life,
yes.
You know, in a normal right. way where I wasn't just fucking absolutely insane. And at the time, like I couldn't afford therapy. Like I couldn't I was on medication, but like I couldn't afford to go to the doctor a lot.
Right.
So I was wanting to try anything, and I, you know, was using like masturbation sigils. Like I was using it for focus. I was using it to just try to not lose my mind on a daily basis, and it did mess things up a little bit. It did make my mind a mess for quite a long time because chaos magic is chaos.
Well,
and I was trying to use, and I was for, because for me, like I was thinking, like, how do I bring order to my brain? I'll use chaos. I'll try to approach it from that angle. And what I don't do chaos magic at all anymore because I eventually figured out like the best thing for my mental health is therapy.
Me too. Right. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
therapy
and the right, you know, medication.
Well,
because I would also like I would use it for like thinking in metaphor a lot and thinking in like trying to find some sort of path, some sort of shortcut, because I think that's what I was looking for at the end of the day. I was looking for a shortcut to mental health, and that's when I realized like there is no shortcuts when it comes to mental
right.
health at
it's
all.
It's an
like,
everyday
it is,
work.
Yes, it is an everyday work. It is a long, long, long process that never, ever, ever ends.
Well,
especially when you've got like me, when you're bipolar, when it is a medical condition that like I'm going to be dealing with until the day I die.
And right. you're very responsible.
Very. And that's yeah. honestly why you're
Have
saving
be.
Lives, because I mean, in the meet and greets, Henry, you can attest to this. Marcus gets people who are constantly like, thank you for telling me it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility.
Yeah,
and like you
that.
Are really helping people. And that's so powerful.
But now so. I'm realizing because of the work that we have done, because of my experience with chaos magic, and because now of our like deeper and deeper reading as things
could
deeper. Can't fucking stop it. Can't stop it.
No, you can't. No, we did this to ourselves, actually.
We did this. But now I am now truly starting to understand that chaos magic, it is easy. And that's kind of what it is. And it's a really good introduction. But actual magic works are a lifelong commitment to discipline. That was a part of why, and I'll reveal this too, where it's like I added working out into my life and work during things, specific things into my life to create discipline, things that I need to stick to. Because
mm-hmm.
things I started reading about, the idea of wanting your words to have more magical potency, is that you need to develop a dependability to yourself. Like you can't
lie. You can't say make promises you don't mean. Like,
right.
like try to really hold yourself accountable for the things you say you're going to do, and if you're going to and like try to do what you can
yep.
to honor the things you're saying, because if not, your words hold no meaning, and then literally they will hold no magical power. And
absolutely.
I think that the real thing is the right hand path magic. That's yeah. The other side, which is an actual deep commitment, which one day I will get to do.
And that's as simple as if you say you're going to go somewhere, go there.
I mean,
you
know, and just be honest with yourself and say
I don't want to go.
If I don't want to go, say I don't want to go. Yeah. But as a, but now, like knowing that, like walking around Edinburgh, like seeing this dude's being like, maybe one day I can retire to the UK and just become a fucking wizard. Like, just become one of these guys as he's shambling around covering
yeah.
runes.
Yeah, yeah, of course. In no way. And no one will ever confuse you for like a little leprechaun. You don't have to be like, I know I'm a wizard. I'm not a leprechaun.
I trust me gold. I keep my gold in the bank. Yeah.
And for me personally, I didn't do so much chaos magic, but you know me, I'm not much of a religious person because I grew up extremely religious, and organized religion, I think, is one of the massive detriments of humankind. But for me, it was secular humanism mm-hmm. that I got that I really fell in love with. And that sort of, if you look at Satanism, there are tenets of Satanism that are basically just secular humanism.
Satanism's fun. That's why it's the fun one.
It's the fun one. But so for me, that was it, where you realize like you're responsible for yourself. You're in control. But because you are in control and you are responsible, you also have a lot of responsibility. To make sure that you are, you know, heading down the right path, and it's not a God telling you this or that or what how to be. It's you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about taking personal responsibility, which I think is a tenet of chaos magic as well.
It is all – that's kind of what it comes down to. And same thing with Satanism. It seems to all yeah. kind of boil down to these ideas of like you are in charge of yourself and
right.
your own territory.
And you will
and
reap whatever you sow.
And you're also responsible. Yes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's really what it's about. It's like you're getting whatever you put out. So understand that intrinsically, that is what always happens. So it's why I don't feel – like I feel like that people get upset. I think we're in a time period right now where it seems that people – the bad guys are winning a lot.
And they're winning with your anger as well.
Yes.
I mean, obviously you have to be upset when you see things you disagree with, but don't let anger take over your life, because then you're paralyzed. As people who are entertainers, we've had a lot of friends who just had to stop entertaining because they were so angry. And mm-hmm. it's like you have to be stronger than that. Don't let the anger take hold. You can continue to do what you do, and that's how you beat the evil.
Well, you also just know that when you give them that energy, they feed on it.
They love
also,
it.
Also, they get theirs. I do believe that people live in a world of a hell, in a hell of their own making all the time.
Well, we might go visit the bunker where Hitler offed himself. Speaking of getting theirs,
yeah,
it's
man,
now
fucking
a parking
throw down
lot,
some,
I believe.
Yeah, it is a parking lot. We'll throw down some peace signs. It'll be fucking cool as shit. You want a fucking hip-hop shoot right in front of it? It's going to be great.
Absolutely.
Rise from your grave. Rise from your grave.
Well, Marcus, I kind of want to ask you this question. Obviously, we had a massive death in the music industry. Daniel Johnston died. So we have a question here. What is everyone's opinion of the late, great Daniel Johnston? And I will just do what I have often done in my life. I will co-opt Marcus's opinion on this. So whatever he says, I agree with.
You will co-opt my personal memories of Daniel Johnston?
Yes, I will, because now they're also mine.
No, Daniel Johnston means a lot to me and, for a lot of different reasons. Like, Daniel Johnston was the very first live show that I ever saw. My first concert was Kid Rock, but my
you're a cool guy. I mean, naturally,
you got to. That's where the girls are.
Honestly, I would have gone to that. No, I would. I'd go to that right now.
Yeah, Kid Rock, Power Man 5000. It was a fucking great show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but my first like show like in a club was Daniel Johnston. It was totally by accident. Like, I was on Sixth Street in Austin when I was like 16, 17. Like because my dad is also I got my love of music from my father, and so. When we were out on in Austin, and he just took me out on Sixth Street, and back in the late 90s, if you were on the street with your dad, you could just go up to a bouncer and say, "This is my son. Can we come in?" And
nice.
The bouncer would say, "Yeah, of course, he's your son. You could do whatever you want."
Yeah, you're obviously a good father. Come on in.
Yeah, get in there. He's having a good time.
It's 1 a.m. on a Tuesday night. Let's go.
Why not? That was still when you could go, like your dad could give you $20 to go buy him smokes at the store.
Oh, yeah, that's what I always did. I went to Mr. Moon. I'd come back with a whole sack load of cigarettes.
Sounds like you're from the 1950s, but this is relatively recent history.
Yeah, I go get snuff for my dad all the time. But it wasn't like, you know, he was out there and like giving me a beer or anything like that. It was just like he loved live music. He knew I love live music. And so it's like, let's just go out and just go and see some cool shit on 6th
That's
Street.
Awesome.
And back then, like 6th Street was pretty fucking cool because you still had emos there. And so we went to emos down 6th Street in Red River and just walked in, and it was Daniel Johnston just happened to be playing with Danny and the Monsters, which was his project in the late 90s. And I had never seen anything like it in my entire life. Like, it was such a strange, affecting personal performance.
Was this back when he wasn't playing guitar?
It was so amazingly raw.
When he wasn't playing guitar, he was just singing?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He just had he had a little music stand in front of him where he was like reading the lyrics. He was going, like, it was also during a time when he was going a little more intense, a little, like, he was screaming a little bit more. And then, like, after the show, he just went over to his little table. And I went over and I got to talk to him. I got to meet him.
That's
and
awesome.
He was just, he was the nicest guy. I was, because I told him, I was like, I can't believe, like, this is so cool. This is my first show. I've never seen live music really before. Like, it's so cool to see you. And he was just like, thank you. Thank you so much. And
that's
then,
awesome.
And I bought his CD. And I still have that CD, like, to this day, like, that he had printed off on a computer. Like, it wasn't on a label or anything like that. And
so badass.
Like, getting to see him and, like, and knowing absolutely nothing about him. Because I remember, and I still, like, left thinking, like, man, I saw somebody that nobody's ever heard of before.
Yeah.
And it was, like, a year later, I was watching MTV.
Yeah.
Like, MTV2. And it just so happened, like, that there was a Daniel Johnston, like, because, you know, he was on MTV back in the day, and they showed, like, an old clip of him,
right.
And I, like, called my dad. I was like, Dad, Daniel Johnston, that's actually a guy. That's actually a dude. Like, people know who he is.
And we got,
like, that's
we,
so cool. And then when I got to college and got to, like, college radio, like, I found out about, like, I heard, like, Fun in 1990 and,
so,
like,
awesome.
All these, you know, fantastic Daniel Johnston albums. And then when The Devil and Daniel Johnston came out, like, when that documentary came out where he talks about his bipolar disorder and what he went through and mixed with schizophrenia,
right.
Like, that, like, because it was, that documentary came out a little bit before I got my diagnosis for bipolar disorder. So it was like, it was very helpful for me to watch that movie and to see somebody else go through it.
Were your parents able to understand what that was?
Bipolar disorder?
Yeah, were they?
God, yes. It runs in the family.
Okay.
No, it's a hereditary thing. So
because I could see that being difficult to try to tell your Texas rancher father, be like,
oh God, no,
had,
no, no, no,
they,
that's,
cool.
That, no, 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 that, that is, no, that, that, I think that would be a stereotype. My,
yeah.
My family is extremely understanding of mental health and is very serious. Like, we're very serious about it.
Right.
Because,
I think
right.
if I told my father how I was feeling, he'd be like, that's dumb.
I know.
No.
My dad literally, I remember calling my dad when I was like 19. I was just like, I don't like the way I was raised. And literally my dad was like, go to therapy. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I guess we'll end this conversation.
No, it was my father who recognized it for the first time because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I didn't know what I was going through, but it was my father who recognized it. It's like, okay, you need to get help. Like, it's like, it was one of those things, like, unfortunately, you got it. Like,
yeah.
Your brothers didn't get it, you got it. So
you know,
now you got to take care of the shit.
This also segues into a really good question that someone asked about how do our parents relate and react to our work.
My mother will text me if she sees someone in our shirt.
Yeah.
Yes. And
my mom,
like,
got a free car wash.
Yes.
She was really excited.
So I guess the best way to say it is they don't listen, they don't fully get it, but they're proud.
My parents love it. They listen to every single episode. Like, they.
Your mom is a true fan.
My mom is a true fan.
Oh, your mother is lovely.
No, no,
she's
love
Marcus's
you, mom.
Mom,
hi,
is a,
mom
is a city gal. She is a fucking hoot.
Yeah.
No, my parents have been extremely supportive of me, like, for my entire life. Like, there's never been a moment where my parents were like, oh, I don't know about that. They're like, all right, this is what you believe in, this is what you're passionate about, good. All right, let's cultivate. My parents, I would not be here without them. They've been extremely supportive.
Well, none of us would be here without our parents.
Because
they had to boink.
Yeah, they fucked each other.
No, they did. Shh.
Yeah.
But I will say, just an extension of what Marcus was talking about with Daniel Johnston, the fact that you thought he was like, this is just my dude.
Yeah, this,
like,
is my guy.
We get that reaction at live shows where, like, when we first started doing tours, we get some people being like, I didn't know that, like, other people listened to you guys.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is.
Yeah.
Which is really just a testament of being able to actually make a true connection with someone.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to see Darren Johnston four times. Yeah, I got to see him that one time. I ended and began a South by Southwest one year with Daniel Johnston performances, and I got to see him in New York once.
Sweet.
And,
so cool.
Yeah, and he was amazing every single time I saw him. He was so good. And at one of those Austin shows, his parents were running the merch booth.
Yeah,
so I got to buy a tee, like, got to meet his parents and got to... It was very sad when he died.
It was very, yeah. very sad.
Because after we found out we were in Birmingham. And yeah. so, yeah, after we did the meet and greet, I went back to the hotel room and I listened to Dan Johnston all night and read comic books and had my own and texted with my friend James about
nice
it.
A little memorial.
Yeah, that's so we both nice. Loved Dan yes.
I did all my work pretty much in a vacuum. Because my parents really couldn't understand it.
Well, I grew up, I was a bit homeschooled. Mm-hmm. And so my mother had us do theater, and I was cast as a tree two times. I really was.
God, you would have been a big, angry tree.
It was a talking tree. So I have been talented for a long time.
Yeah, I kind of did. My mom started. Yeah, this is. Yeah. It's a long story. I can't even remember.
All good. Let's move on.
Yeah. Here's a more general conversation. Can we explain the process? How do we pick, schedule topics, and how much research do we generally do for each episode?
Well, picking topics, usually, yeah, me and Henry have a large spreadsheet of, God, I think right now the spreadsheet's got like, 60 or 70 topics on it?
Yeah, and then we'll just kind of randomly pick. It's also like if something piques our interest at a specific time.
Yeah.
And then we have ones that we know that we want to hit that we also need we know are going to take a lot of time to put together. Then we have simpler episodes that we know that are easier to put together if we're in a really bad time crunch, especially mm-hmm. with touring all the time.
And the book was also like pretty difficult to juggle, the book and the weekly Ugh. Podcast schedule. But, you know, we've still got like these, like Mormonism is one that like we kind of waited until we had time to go into it. And now also like we have... a great team of research assistants now,
yes.
like people that really help out with that. And that helps us to do like bigger series and it helps us to do like more in-depth shit.
Yeah.
Where those, the research, yeah, Joel and Rachel have been fantastic. Lately,
and I will say
we've had a lot of research assistants throughout the years, but those are the ones that are working with us now, and they've helped out a ton.
They're awesome. And I will say you all do a great job of keeping the shows alive with different content. So after this Mormonism series, we're all going to take a breath and we're going to talk about aliens.
Yes.
And I was speaking with some fans about, you know, it's like when we do these really intensive, like Scientology or Jonestown, come back with something like aliens. And it's strange now to even say this, but like now our lighter episodes are about serial killers.
Sometimes.
Because
killers are by far the easiest episodes.
Yes, because it's like covering these cults, like the Children of God cult.
Well,
I'm still traumatized by that series.
People maybe could understand that we have to come up with a spin or our perspective on the topic. So with serial killers, it's a little bit easier because you're doing a character portrayal. So you can kind of find the gestalt or whatever it is that you want to talk about, what's like the main drive of this person from our perspective, and it's kind of easier to boil down. But something like Mormonism, like we are truly at, like, I've seen some like little critiques of our show that they say, you guys just read a book and talk. And it's like, well, actually, it's not true. Like, most of the time, it's several sources. There's normally, like, a main source that we like to direct you towards that we used, but also so you could buy the book and you can also
right.
do your own fucking research, because I think that's super important. But stuff like Mormonism, it's not just no man knows my history. It is also, like, countless websites, people's testimony, everything that we can get on the internet that I can fucking fold into my brain. Try to read the Book of Mormonism. Try to do all these kind of stuff. Same thing when we did Scientology.
Right.
It's not just like, yes, it's a book about L. Ron Hubbard, but then it's also the book that's like, it was the book that was debunked about L. Ron Hubbard. It's from the perspective of Scientologists onto L. Ron Hubbard. So you can see how they look at him.
Right.
So you can also incorporate that, because all of it is fodder for material.
Well, and that goes to another question that we received about Henry's characters. years. So how much do you pre-plan when it comes to those? Because obviously, you know, your Israel Keys, your that's Final Truth. Like, all of these characters are very iconic now, starting with Detective Popcorn. I think that was the first one that really took over with BTK and the Hot Dog Squad.
But that was was improvised.
But what's your process of finding the character and you know, sort of how do you interpret the people?
I don't know what you do, Kissel, but sometimes when I get, because Marcus will send me the first draft of the script, and then what I'll do is, I have already been building either a character, depending on whether or not I have decided, because certain characters, in certain stories, the main character will be something I will play, and in certain stories, the side characters are more important. It's
right,
more to develop, like almost like a stupid
like
ensemble.
Like Minnie and Nanny and H.H. Holmes, for example.
Yeah, where I didn't really play, I did H.H. Holmes, but mostly we were setting up the environment around H.H. Holmes.
Right.
Where like L. Ron Hubbard, I was doing a little bit more of an exact impersonation of L. Ron Hubbard that I was working on, but then something like Joseph Callinger, when that episode came out, I came up with the voice. I mean, obviously, it was a complete ripoff of Bernie Madoff. Bernie Sanders, a mixture of him and
Larry David.
And Larry David.
Because Henry will sometimes, like, when we're working on the episode, like, Henry will talk to me about, like, kind of like run by the character, like, this is what I'm thinking about doing with this character, and we'll, you know, we'll discuss it. Like in the week leading up to the episode, up to the actual like recording.
And I have my own series of notes. So I'll start a notes and I will start a series of notes, and I will definitely write down jokes that I think of as I research through the week. And then when I get the first draft, I will sometimes take those little bits that I come up with and I'll place them into where they would be draft in accordance to the research that I've done on my own. Because then I come at it from one side, and then Marcus comes from it from the more official side.
And when it comes to the book, just to plug that book, it'll be out in April. I think it's a perfect interpretation of how we actually do that in the live show. Because Marcus has the bulk of the chapter, and then we kind of come in with our little jokes. For me, obviously I read the outline, but I just like to be totally in the moment, and I like to listen, and then I like to make my little bits and skits when I feel like it's getting a little bit too heavy.
And what part of the question then that you brought is like, what do me and you think is the most underrated Henry Zebrowski character? And I would say for me, it is Helen from the Black Widows episode.
Yes. I love those episodes. I love those episodes.
Helen, the 65-year-old Los Angeles woman who murdered a series of homeless men in an insurance scam. Because
yes,
that's right.
That
voice,
was a great
like,
one.
That's another voice that like I'll just kind of think, oh, Helen. I'm Helen. Yeah.
I love doing that.
Like that is my favorite underrated character.
Live from your grave.
Why hasn't there been an LPOTL episode where the research was conducted solely by Kissel?
We did a little bit with Benoit.
Yeah.
And then with West Memphis 3.
You did know a lot about that.
Yeah, I know a lot about true. I know a lot about criminal justice reform and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's because it would probably not be up to snuff for Marcus. Honestly,
are you guys
I think if you want an episode that's entirely researched by Ben, that's called Abe Lincoln's Top Hat.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do know a lot about politics.
Yeah, that's my passion. That's Ben's passion. That's what Ben knows. Ben knows politics, and you got a whole show for it.
Yeah.
So you guys ready for a question that's going to probably get us in a lot of trouble?
Let's do it.
What's your opinion on the death penalty?
You want to do that? I'm against it.
Okay.
I've been against the death penalty since I was a child. I'll never forget my dad asked me what I thought about the death penalty when maybe I was 11 years old, and I was like, I'm against it. And he's like, why? I was like, I just don't trust the government, and I don't think they should put people to death. And then that's it.
Yeah, too many innocent people get murdered.
I was actually speaking with someone in Sweden about who was from Norway.
Yeah.
And from Oslo, as a matter of fact. So I was like, with Breivik, I was like, so that dude, as a matter of fact, this was at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happened to be sitting next to a fan. And I was like, but Breivik is going to get out in 21 years, right? Like, he doesn't have life. But apparently he's like, no, he won't, because they do have a clause where it's like, if he's a public risk, they stay in jail for life.
Yeah.
But I was like, but he's still getting treated pretty well. And he's like, yeah, this was a chance for Norway to prove that everyone is treated equal under the law. He's horrible, but he still gets treated humanely. Now, of course, this is where very testing, because it's like he's a horrible, horrible piece of shit monster who did horrible things. But I think that there's something very good about that. Because in the U.S., we don't have a justice system. We have a straight-up punish system.
Yeah.
and there is no reform, there is no rehabilitation. We just want to see people suffer. And a lot of these people are in there for reasons that are, you know, of circumstance. And it's quite sad. I'm
deeply conflicted, only because I believe there are some people that are literally monsters
but
from fairy tales.
But isn't life a death sentence?
I mean,
we're
just
all going
like
to die. They,
birthdays are for the dying.
No, I know that.
Funerals are
yes,
for the living.
But I'm just saying, like, what's the point of the government going in there and be like, I'm going to inject you with this fucking needle? It's like, you're going to die.
Look at the world that we live in now. These, a lot of these characters get built up. I feel like it's almost just their sheer existence of still being around allows them to sort of... It's weird because magically, I believe in the idea that you can house them and watch them wither, right? And like the way that a BTK just sits in jail and withers, and you can write him a letter, but you have to fill out his little form.
He's such a piece of shit. Bullshit.
You have to have a pre-interview with him.
It was easier to get Dan Aykroyd on the show.
Yes. Where, so that's the kind of thing. And then I'm very conflicted because there's certain people where it's like, you know, I think that they should just be X'd out. Like the people who do certain crimes, they should just be fucking like, you don't deserve to be around anymore. Just your sheer energy being in the world is a bad thing, but then it's also who we expect, like, who is the person that's allowed to be the judge of who should live or die?
These judges are maniacs.
Because you're starting to get to like a series of degrees here. Because yes. What you're saying is that there is what that gets to is if you, like, you can only execute someone if you're like 1,000% sure that they're guilty, but you can't execute someone that you're only 100% sure that they're guilty.
Right.
Like, it has to be equal protection under the law, because that so many innocent people get murdered by the state every single year. It happens again and again and again. There's been so many cases that have been proven. Guys who have been executed, they've been later exonerated through DNA evidence or through you know, cops saying like, yes, I lied on the stand. You know, that the people that have been put away by like false testimony. Yep. Like, it is just, you know, a human justice system is not infallible.
That's why we have to have a robot justice system.
I don't know. But yes, if you do want to hear more about the justice system, I talk about that quite a bit on Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. And we live in a very vengeful society. Mm-hmm.
Well, that
and,
I do agree with. I do believe the idea is that it's expressing, but then also, is it not good to purge the inner violence of
That's
all human
movie.
Beings? I mean, but I'm not talking about the purge, but is it not good to sort of do a ritualistic purging?
I don't think
the
violence is ever the way to cure violence.
I don't know. I've been doing it for forever.
It's not working.
I don't think it helps. I don't think it helps at all. Like,
but it used to be a willing person we used to sacrifice up to your anthropomized version of the universe, whether it's like the Mayans and the Aztecs.
Well, the bog people, remember that when we were at
They were chosen to be sacrificed, that you lived a great life, or maybe we should actually do that, where actually it's the best of society that should choose to be sacrificed to the universe for the ongoing welfare of us as a species.
I think we've move beyond that.
Yeah, I think
superstition.
Oh, I know.
We've moved.
Do you want to be sacrificed?
No, not me. I'm not one of the best of society. Malala.
No, it's funny to go to.
Yes, great.
I went to the Swedish History Museum yesterday, and it was really funny that like their section on like Christianity, like the Christian iconography section that they had was, I mean, some of those beautiful things, because I love Christian iconography and like old 15th, 16th century artwork.
Right.
And what's funny about Sweden is like they were talking about Christianity like it was in the past.
Yes.
Like, oh, well, come like, to America.
These things that we used to believe in here in Sweden. And it's like, oh no, there are a lot of people who still are very much into shit.
We had a meeting, a straight up meeting in Sweden we had a meeting, and the first things out of the mouth, one of the first things, we're like, well, this is a godless country. Like the whole thing, I was just like, so refreshing.
We cut off your Johnson. Thank you.
Here's a silly question. Can Mr. Fantastic satisfy Galactus sexually?
No.
Why wouldn't he be able to?
I don't believe that Galactus, as he exists now, has a sex drive. Possibly before, when he was still a man, he did have a sex drive.
So he's like fucking the Mormon god?
Well, the Galactus origin story is very messy, and not many people have... And not everyone has agreed on exactly what it is, but I do not believe that Galactus has a sex drive. And if he did have a sex drive, then the Silver Surfer would have taken care of it.
Oh,
it was like his slave,
No, well, he was his herald.
I don't know. Okay.
Galactus has come.
Oh! Oh, God.
And what do you mean, Mr. Fan? What, using the ultimate nullifier? I don't understand that.
Wrapping around his cock.
Oh, that was Mr. Fantastic. He should be able to do something.
That's what he was saying, that he could be able to stretch and he'd be fit around his dick.
Fit around his dick. Yeah, I don't believe that Galactus is a sexual being at this time.
He might get it back if he has a massive Viagra.
Before, when he was still a man, yes, or not a man, wherever, whatever planet he was from.
Do you think Galactus's penis, though, would be, if it did have a penis, would be strong enough to tear through the whatever Mr. Fantastic is when he's stretchy?
No, because nothing, as far as I know, nothing has been proven to tear through Mr. Fantastic.
So it wouldn't tear through, so it might...
He's just
going to
wear him as a condom, then.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure that Mr. Fantastic is not infinitely stretchable. I'm sure he has some sort of breaking point.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh. Although unstable molecules, the material from which the Fantastic Four's uniforms are made, are theoretically... infinitely stretchable.
Well, this is sort of a question that has to do, it's kind of sexual. This is a sexual question. Are any mass shootings out there sexually motivated?
There's a people that, this is an interesting series of questions, because they want to say, like, is it a form of sexual release? I think in America, it has become, this is obviously just fucking my opinion. From what I'm looking, what we've read and what we've seen, it is now just becoming a way to get heard, and that it's actually closer to it's missionary killing. Mm-hmm. It's about making a point. It's not like a serial killer who views, a lot of times a serial killer, what we've, you know, like obviously the again opinion, but like a serial killer, it's a private series of rituals and almost artwork. It's a personal expression, where a mass killer is doing it on purpose to be picked up by the news quite a bit.
What about someone like an Elliot Rodgers? Obviously he wasn't hard driving around there, but it was certainly sexually motivated because he was an incel.
I feel like the gun actually replaces it. It does replace the cum.
Yeah, we mentioned this on stage during our live show as well.
I think it comes from a place of anger. But, you know, when you're talking about, like, serial killers versus mass shooters, like, serial killing is defined by, you know, three or more killings with a cooling off period, because it's about a release.
And distinct MO.
Yeah, a distinct MO. It's about a release, and it's about something that can be replicated. That's the thing about serial killing is something that has to be, like, they replicate it over and over and over again. That's why some of these guys take trophies, why some of them return to the scene of the crime, because they're trying to replicate that feeling. But mass shooting is a one and done deal. Like,
it's an explosion. It's an ejaculation of violence.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of those guys are hard as the dickens.
You
the
think
entire
so?
Time. Yeah.
The Virginia Tech...
Sung Cho.
Man. It's the uniform. It's also depends the way they do it, too, I think. And I think that now we're going to see... Now that we have so many different flavors and shades of mass shootings, then you can really see... But they seem to all kind of go along the lines, which is they believe that they are... That this is their shout to the world.
Yeah, but right. I mean, but I don't believe Howard Unruh was sexually motivated in any way.
No, he was just completely... He had just... I think the term is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I think that was it.
No, he's just angry.
Rage is a very powerful drug.
He's narcissistic. Because that's the other thing, too, about these guys, is that it's a large streak of narcissism, where they do not care about anybody else but themselves.
They want to put their pain on you.
It's an insanely selfish act.
And it's also people who literally view the world through television or through the internet, and they don't actually experience reality, so they don't have any connection with human beings, and they really do believe all of the bullshit that's spread out there, that all humans are horrible and they're the ones who are going to purge the society of the evil ones.
If you see a dude with a Heath Ledger Joker shirt on, buy him a cup of coffee. Like, honestly, just buy him a cup of coffee. Oh, try to say hello. Try to befriend these people.
I'm very excited for Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, by the way. I've been looking into it even more.
My controversial opinion is that I fucking don't want to see... I want Batman.
No, it's not a... I know. I don't understand this about you. It's about the bad guy. It's about the Joker.
But it's King of Comedy, but without Batman... It's just King of Comedy, you know what I mean?
No, it's not
Batman,
King of Comedy.
Batman's going to at least be somewhere. I hope he at least shows up, or they talk about the Batman.
No, because it already shows in the trailer that he is talking to Thomas Wayne, which is Batman's father. And so if Batman's father is still alive, that means that Batman is either... Bruce Wayne has either not been born yet, or Batman has not been born yet.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne is still...
As that night in Crime Alley, after the Wayne family went to see a late night showing of Mask of Zorro. Oh, did they not think that that was going to be a wonderful night? Yes, they did. And then, unfortunately, in the alley, Joe Chill took down
Thomas and Martha
Wentworth. I thought it was Jack Napier.
That's a whole different thing. No, that's just for the movie. That was just the movie.
Joe Chill.
Yeah, Joe Chill is the in official canon in the comic books. Joe Chill is the guy that killed.
But it's also why I don't like Gotham. I don't need to watch fucking Batman Muppet Babies. All right, I don't need to see all these people without Batman.
No, I understand that, but this is the Joker. This is kind of cool.
Joaquin Phoenix is going to be untouchable.
He's
going to
be great.
Obviously, that is a no-brainer, my friend.
I agree.
You know what I mean.
All right. Well, let's see. We do have one question about my punditry. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to answer that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Your questions.
So how we feel about you going on Fox News?
Yeah, what do you think? Because I get a lot of reaction to that.
I think you can do whatever you want. I'm glad that you don't produce for them anymore, because I think that put you in a different frame of mind, in a different set of thinking, and you know that. That is like a part of when you have to fully generate content for the channel.
Well, to be fair, it was the comedy show Red Eye, which was like, you know, it was a little bit different.
And it was so dumb. It was so light. It was dumb.
It's goofy. It was, but then of course, Trump changed everyone's. I had a lot of really good friends of mine who I knew were conservative, but I was like, all right, at least they're not like stupid.
Yeah.
But then Trump kind of changed a lot of people's brains.
Yeah.
And then it became extremely difficult to sympathize. So after Trump won that election, I was like, I cannot go to News Corp in this way. But, you know,
you crush it on the show now.
The question is for you guys, though. But I mean, I love going in there and arguing. Honestly, I love it because it's like my favorite thing in the world.
But when I watch you do your hits, I know that you are unfortunately you're the reasonable one.
Yeah,
like when you go in there, you're the one that actually is like, so they need people like you to be able to go in there. And you have to be on Fox News.
I also just don't want to represent like people who are a little bit left leaning, like such elitist assholes. Well, you can be cool.
That's the funny thing that, you know, you're on Fox News, like you are the crazy liberal. You.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Ben Kissel is the crazy liberal.
Just not a racist.
Yeah.
That's all it means. That's it.
I mean, it's like, of course, like, you know, I appreciate you going on there and like giving a different perspective. But I mean, personally, I mean, I do think that Fox News is genuinely evil.
Yeah.
I think they're evil. I think that they are evil in the most cynical way in the world, where it is manipulating people's brains and manipulating people's thoughts and emotions in order to make money, which is one of the most evil things I think people can do, is manipulating people's emotions and thoughts and not caring about the consequences of doing that just because you need a bigger paycheck. I know you don't do that, but Fox News has been doing that on a daily basis for decades now.
Television
and they have ruined
news.
Lives, they have ruined families, they have changed people irreparably forever. And I truly believe in the future, people, I mean, I know people look on it now like this, but in the future, I think people will truly look at Fox News as a truly evil force in the late 20th, early 21st century.
And there's a great documentary about that, as a matter of fact. Something about like how Fox News changed my dad or something like that.
But Kissel, you really illuminated something for me when you really started working there at first. Before Trump, you were really, it's true, it's like all people on all channels, on every one of these news channels, they are essentially actors. There are journalists in there.
No, they're all actors. No, I agree with that.
But the problem
as well.
Is having the wherewithal to know it. Like my dad is sucked in a vortex of Fox News because he just watches it and he thinks Trump is funny. You know, I mean, like it's that kind of thing where
right.
we had the idea of the blending of entertainment and facts has become so insane. I mean, you're talking to three people. We do edutainment. That's what we do. But a
right.
part of it is trying to really draw the line between, well, these are the facts, these are our funny opinions about the facts, and these are jokes. Like, what do we do I feel like it's a constant balancing act.
I don't go on Fox News as a comedian, because I don't think politics are very funny. And if you listen to Able Against Top Hat, you probably notice that. I'm a funny guy, but I'm not like trying to tell jokes or be satirical. I'm
right.
trying to actually provide information, because these are very serious things. But I will say, seeing how the sausage is made of television news was fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
And no one, please God, do not get your information from TV news. You can pick up tidbits every now and again, but it is 100% entertainment.
Yeah.
It is not real. The way that they frame everything, look no further than the lead up to the Iraq war. If you want to see how the Fourth Estate has been bought and sold 10 times over, So please do not get your information from television news, but watch it for entertainment. It's editorializing, and maybe you can learn something along the way. But if that's the only place that you're getting information, this is why we have Donald Trump.
And I also loved, I loved hearing the inside stuff from you when you were like really doing it. Like one of the most illuminating things was when you said you were about to go on the air with a guy, and he was telling you his actual opinion.
Oh my God, I was so pissed.
He was telling you his actual opinion, and then he went on.
This was about torture. So yeah. I was doing Kennedy's show. It was on Fox Business, and you know, so this guy, he was a general. He was telling me, he's like, of course, waterboarding is torture. It's like the worst thing you can ever go through. I was like, okay, cool. So I'm watching in the green room, and he got on television. He's like, nah, it's not torture. Anyway, it's just like kind of like drinking water too fast. Just making jokes. And I was like, you motherfucker, you just lied to the American people. And that was another realization. And I saw it happen on HLN also. Where people say one thing in the green room and they go on television and they just blatantly lie. And, you know, it's weird. I met a lot of conservative politicians, and meeting them is very bizarre because they are different people in many ways.
And they all look like me, same little bodies.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate for us with godlike bodies.
Of course. That's what cherub-like gods.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's a little bit. And if you want to watch my Fox News clips, you can go to Ben Kissel on YouTube. I got a whole channel arguing with people.
Okay, here's another good one. Do you think that we've ever been properly investigated by the CIA or the quote-unquote men in black? Do you think that we are on, like, legitimately, do you think that on some level we are on a list anywhere?
Well, there was a period of time when me and you, Henry, were
talking. Wasn't that the 9/11 episodes?
Yes.
Around the 9/11 episodes, there was a period of time when every time me and Henry would call each other on the phone to talk about the episode, where we would hear a click.
The series of clicks.
Like, we would hear a click at the beginning of the conversation, and then the second we started, the second we were done with the 9/11 stuff and started having like friend conversations, like just about like our lives, there would be another click.
Interesting.
I did not hear it on any other phone conversation that I had with anybody else. Abruptly stopped.
Yeah, because
like
now we don't do
later.
Because we don't hit
that's
as
the only
much.
Thing that I can see.
Yeah, that was the one. I mean, besides the fact that I get pulled by security at the airport.
That's because you're a maniac.
But I am. You couldn't visibly tell I'm a maniac.
Yes, you can.
Why?
Because you look like a maniac.
I do dress outlandishly.
You gotta look. Time to time. You gotta look.
But I get pulled all the time.
Yes, because you got frazzled hair. It looks like you're just ready to blow up a plane.
But we also don't do the same conspiracy heavy stuff that we used to do.
No, because it got too fucking real. Because once Alex Jones became mainstream, it ruined conspiracy.
Well, it stopped being fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really mean this was when I would like to get back to it when things are different.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
When sure, when people change, can still have fun with it and play with it.
Yes. Then I would like to go back to discussing those topics.
But I would say, you look at COINTELPRO, you look at CIA operations over the years. I have a lot of friends who are Democratic Socialists. They all firmly believe like half of them are CIA agents. Who knows?
But you just but live you in public. That's what my whole thing is. Like, I'm not like I think there's a massive invasion of privacy. It's happening at all times.
Of course.
Especially it's more obvious, honestly, in European countries. It's way more obvious. The CCTV shit is way more obvious coming in and out of customs. You can do the fast express where you just get your picture taken. But I'm a professional entertainer. I love getting my picture taken. And I also there's a list where you can find online where I'll be at any time.
Whatever.
Yeah. So I will just be, I live in public.
Right.
So
yeah, we all do. I'm not worried. I mean, we quite possibly have a file somewhere, but
maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the CIA doesn't give a fuck about us.
That's the thing. Yeah. And honestly, though, but people, you got to remember, like, the Patriot Act is very real, and the government has a lot of power and a lot of ability to track you. And so don't pretend like they're not. Because they definitely are.
Yeah.
Get a VPN, folks.
Yes.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I actually feel truly bad for actual introverts, for people who do really want to be left alone, because it's not possible anymore.
All right. What would you say one of your most formative life experience has been? Like, just a one that is either for good or for bad. What is something that you ran into that was like, oh no, or
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, for me, I think you guys probably already know this answer. When we started doing foster care when I was 12 years old, immediately grew up. All my toys were had to be given away, which is not even close to the worst thing that happened. Our first two kids were both molested by their father, so I immediately realized that, like, dads fucked their children, and that was quite an eye-opener for a 12-year-old Ben Kissel. So I saw the worst parts of humanity. I remember one girl we had, she had a bunch of burn coils on her butt because her mom used to sit her on the top of the stove when she was crying. That didn't stop her from crying, I'll tell you that much.
No.
And I was like, why is that happening? So that for me was like, shit, dude, people are evil, and that's probably why I have a very dark sense of humor and probably why I started drinking at 12 years old.
Yep. Just to relax.
Literally, I was a Hager detective by 12.
I would say one of my fairly recent, I guess something that just comes to mind, I guess if we want to relate it to the show, was a live show in Baltimore about, I don't know, like 3-4 years ago, something like that. The very first time we did a bigger show.
Oh my God, that was awesome.
Because like I'm not a live performer. Like I've been in radio for almost 20 years now, but I got into radio specifically because I wanted to do entertainment. I liked doing entertainment, but I didn't like people looking at me.
Of course.
And radio was perfect for that. But doing live shows was like a something that I definitely had to ease into and get used to over the years. But going on stage in Baltimore at Auto Bar.
That's right.
I love Auto Bar, love Baltimore and all that. But, you know, it was the first time going up in front of like 300 people, and the fear that I had walking out on stage was like nothing I'd ever felt in my life. Like,
right.
I have to go out here. I have to not fuck up. And for me, it was always like, I can't disappoint you two guys. Like, I can't, like.
But you know, that's why we yap.
I know, but I was like.
We yap, you're always safe.
We don't yap.
Like, yeah, but I can't let, but I just didn't want to.
No, of course,
like,
I understand.
Just like, I can't let these guys down. Like, you know, I depend on them. They depend on me. Like, I can't let them down.
It's like jazz, but with comedy.
Yeah.
It's about the words you don't say.
That's right.
And there's like a list that you can't.
Yeah, it turns out you can get fired if you say like a lot of those words. Yeah.
But it was about, like, you know, just being up on stage and being able to, like, breathe in and breathe out and getting through that intense stage fright and, like, just saying, like, I don't even know what I said, but, like, I said one thing that got a laugh. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, relax.
I can do this. Like, I can.
I remember I can, you said, why do we drive on the parkways
and park on driveways?
How do you know if yogurt's gone bad?
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Warnke. What about you, Henry?
All right, let me do two. I would say bad / neutral was I had a bad trip one New Year's Eve where I just ate too many mushrooms. And I understood, because by then I'd already been experiencing hallucinogens quite a bit. But I end up, like, I thought I was dying. I got into a car. I tried to leave this party. We had all burnt our shirts in a bonfire, and then we were cold. And then I remember Eddie had a Santa hat on, and he was like, some people gotta go. He was, like, being real Easy Rider. It was, like, one of those nights where the music was too loud, and everybody was getting way, way, way too fucked up, like, mixing a lot of drugs. And then, like, I tried to go home, and then I remembered, like, I was like, I'm straight enough to get in the car, and then the car was too big and I was like way too small, and like I got home and I had a full-on like scream cry inside of a shower, thinking that the shower was gonna make me better, and then I ate a couple of Xanny bars to try to pass out, and then I woke up gurgling on my own blood. I had a full nosebleed in my sleep, and I woke up like spit up all this blood. And it sent me in a downward path for about 6 months, but it showed me just like the power of the human mind.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, like it was, so it is, it's important. I kept doing hallucinogens out. Now it takes
good
prep.
I'm happy that you didn't stop. Yeah.
No. But you have to, because then you learn also that's a part of this.
Right.
Which is weird. It's a weird lesson you get.
Well, I had a positive mushroom experience that I know, like the first time I did mushrooms, it actually connected me to humanity for the very first time.
Oh, I remember because I was reading Heinlein. Uh-huh. I remember writing a note being like, a totally grok what grokking is now. Like, immediately, I was like, fuck
I was, like, listening to the Don Ellis Orchestra, like, watching purple notes come out of my fucking speakers, eating some fucking Papa John's, because I was delivering for Papa John's.
Ooh, cool. Fucking, you're not supposed to be guy on your own supply, though, man.
Yeah, I know, bro, but I did anyway. Two pies a night. Always
damn,
free.
Bro.
That was when you were chonky.
Yeah, I was a little, yeah, I was about 40 pounds heavier, yeah.
Nice.
In college, yeah, but I just fucking listened to that shit. I went to a libertarian meeting. Like, I wandered into a libertarian meeting.
That'll do it.
Like, fucking tripping balls and, like, fucking gave, like, a big speech to silence. just, like, a big speech. Like, Mike, what I think...
The first podcast.
Like, that is amazing,
dude. This is what I think human free will is all about. Okay, let's get into it, fellas. And then I just, like, gave the speech and then just fucking, like, hit the table real hard and go, well... I'm out, boys. it was a very fun afternoon at Tech Terrace.
Afternoon, even.
Yeah, it was afternoon. Yeah, it was a Friday afternoon.
I love it. What was your second one, Henry?
Honestly, getting married. Getting married was a very beautiful part. I didn't realize what it was, how positive I was. Like, not that
it
was
wonderful.
But it's like, it was nice what it brings to your life. It's like a human ceremony that was nice to be a part of.
And of course, you had two weddings, and the second one was at a castle, and it was very sweet.
The
second one was a party. All right, we got one more question. Let's do a goofy one and wrap her up.
Have you guys ever received any bras or underwear in the mail?
No, we don't. And the only thing, yesterday on stage in Stockholm, Sweden, Neil Diamond gets bras thrown on stage.
Yes.
Underwear is thrown on stage to all David Copperfields of the world.
Literally at
and
a man.
And we got two books. A man threw two books on stage. That's what we get.
It said
books.
UFOs in the Third Reich. And it was just a book with a huge swastika on it that just like flipped onto the stage. And I was just like, this great.
Great.
Thank
this
you.
This is what we
just
get.
Just about to go into Berlin.
Yeah, perfect.
I actually do have a question that I wanted to, a question that was for me that I wanted to answer.
Okay, please.
It was a hometown question. What are some things you missed most about Lubbock? And
yes.
I would say the only things that I miss from Lubbock is I miss my friends and my family. Yeah, because I have a lot of family still in Lubbock, and I miss my friends, and I miss my comic book store. I miss Starbucks and comics. They have since moved from Avenue Q over to Indiana. I haven't been to the new store yet. But if you're in Lubbock, please go to Starbucks and comics for all of your comic book needs. I worked there for a couple years. I went there for like 5-6 years. Like, Starbucks and comics is one of the most important places in my life.
Starbucks and comics?
Starbucks.
Starbucks
Yeah, Starbucks
and comics.
And comics. No, the owner helped me through some very... very difficult times during my first mental breakdown. And I miss Starbucks and comics. And the other question, what was your favorite restaurant in the city and why is it Thai Pepper? Thai Pepper was not my favorite restaurant in the city.
Jeez.
Thai Pepper was too sweet, too Americanized. My favorite place was Chu Chai over on 19th Street. It is traditional Thai food. They do it in the spicy Thai style that like fucking hurts.
That's
you.
What I like.
Like, it's where I love it. It's where I developed a taste for spicy food. Chu Chai is fantastic. I also still love calzones from one guy from Italy. And the third Lubbock question, were you ever in one of the lo-fi Ralph's Records commercials? No. I worked at Ralph's Records for a period of time. Still know Ralph. Ralph is a good man. But I was never in one of his commercials because Ralph likes the spotlight.
Also, you know, real quick, someone asked me UFO books for starters. You wanted to check out, honestly, Richard Dolan's UFOs in the 21st Century and read Jacques Vallée's Passage to Magonia. I think they're both very interesting. And also, just read the Foundation series by Isaac Asimov.
Mm-hmm. All right. There it is. Well, thank you all so much for sending in your questions. And yeah, we'll do this once every 370 episodes. So we'll be back at you in about 11 years. Thank you all so much for listening to this. Honestly, we love you all so much. Thanks for coming out and seeing our live show. We absolutely adore being able to travel the world together. So I guess that's about it, guys.
That's it.
That's all it, right, man. Everyone. We landed her in the harbor.
As we always do.
I wonder what we said.
I don't know. Never forget, hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Again.
Magustalations.
Hail me. Mormonism Part 5 coming your way.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
The dirty, dirty life of Brigham Young.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.